All right, and welcome back. This is Hardcast, and I'm your guest host, Rob. I am pleased to be joined with multiple members of the crew here. Why don't you introduce yourself over there on that mic?
I'm Billy. I am the guest on this pod.
Yeah, Billy is the stalwart custodian of this broadcast effort. And he has admonished me to basically talk about anything I want. I think I'm gonna bring the gain up just a little bit. My waveform. I'm watching my waveform kind of populate in the audio software. And there we go. That's a healthier waveform.
The last one was quiet. It was a little quiet.
All right. Yeah. Good deal. So how was your day, Billy?
It was good. I played two 3-bangers for Premodern, and then I played a draft, single elimination draft of Mystery Booster 2. Got my butt kicked. I set up Smokestack Squirrel Nest.
How is that even a thing, dude?
It's like the boosters are like randomized. It's like a chaos cube type thing.
Oh, sick. That sounds like fun.
And it was not even close to enough. Like, I'm like, turn one dork, turn two Squirrel Nest, turn 3 Smokestack, turn 4 start, like, and it just like wasn't even nearly enough.
I understand.
So that was frustrating, and I drafted a Cataclysm.
Oh, okay.
I was like, oh, I'm gonna do like Smokestack Cataclysm and have a land, a door, like whatever creature, and a Squirrel Nest, and I'm gonna wreck.
Uh-huh.
Completely off base.
Oh,
like,
dear.
Modern Magic is not pre-modern.
So even outside of slinging spells, personally, how was your day?
It was good. I caught a ride in with the gang. And I actually, on the way, so after the tournament, it was, thank you for asking, man.
Of course.
And on the way back, I discovered another, so remember when we were getting breakfast the other day?
Oh, yeah.
And we were talking about, like, I was flicking through Wikipedia a little bit when we were talking about Pittsburgh's history.
Very worthwhile.
And there's this concept called industrial heritage.
Mm.
So you know how in New England, there's these stone walls in the middle of the woods.
Of course,
for like,
yeah,
no reason.
Yeah, so like the flat, almost like shale.
Yeah. Or like those like big like brick mill buildings next to rivers.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Those two things are features of like New England industrial heritage.
Sure.
So Pittsburgh, part of their industrial heritage is that there's a ton of rail left from industrial times, and they're like, okay, what do we do with it all?
Yeah.
So have these tiny little short track, like not connected to anything, just like a single, like, just like two stop ripper,
yeah,
rail sections everywhere, and I found this train right next to the fucking Airbnb that goes up and down this huge fucking hill for $2.75.
Whoa!
So remember when we walked to the venue?
Yeah, we walked for like an hour.
Instead of that bullshit, it just like it drops you off right at the bridgehead on our side.
No
way!
Like
literally one block from our crib, and you ride this cool like, and it's a cable car.
Oh, so sick.
Instead of, it's on rails still, but it's like, it's moved by cable. It's
understood.
It's called a funicular train or something like
I
that.
I think I got diagnosed with that once years ago.
Yeah. So now we can just, tomorrow morning, it's just like, get on the funicular train.
That's
275,
fantastic.
Drops you off right at the bridgehead, and then it's 15 minutes to the venue.
No big deal. I mean,
no big deal. Way better than parking.
But I would like to say that your idea to take a walk from the Airbnb to the venue on a beautiful day,
yeah,
really did a lot of good for us, because, you know, it was a lot of fresh air, a lot of movement, and I, you know, and then we got downtown, we ate, and I felt refreshed and ready to play. Like, I thought that was a fantastic idea.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so it was perfect. But if we're a little bit shot, a little, you know, some accumulating fatigue is setting in.
Yes.
We can take the, you know, funicular
train
down to, you know, where we need to go.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's very easy.
I was desperately searching as I was generating the sentence for some kind of like clever, you know,
solution.
Yeah. But nothing came. I was going to make some like crude, whatever.
Funicular. Barely
knew
her.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's sensational. And I think, Bryce, you want to step in?
Yeah. Press stop.
I will.
And then press play again when Bryce is on the mic.
All right. Good job, pal. Cool. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we're talking about the rig that we have here that Billy has set up, and I'm looking at the Audio-Technica condenser mics, and you know they differ from regular mics. How?
I know very little about this.
Yeah,
I know that they're different than they have a different premise of operation than the mic that you have at like the rock show or the open mic or whatever.
So condenser mics seem a little bit more forgiving and like they're perfect for this use,
they're,
right?
They're much more gentle.
Yeah,
they pick up a lot more.
Love that. And well, I think they're active mics, yeah.
Right? I think so.
They're,
I don't know.
They're active, I think.
Yeah.
Like the Shure SM7B that you see a lot of like
yes.
podcasters using, these are very similar.
Yep.
Whereas like a Shure 58 or 57, those are cardioid pattern. So like the pickup,
Rob's gesturing.
Yeah, I'm making like a little heart with my hands.
You too, Rob.
Yeah, thanks, pal. So the field that those mics where those mics pick up is shaped like a heart.
Okay.
So whereas these.
They'll pick up anything.
Yeah.
As compared to like the rock show mic, which is meant to just pick up
right.
the musician's instrument or voice, and like you need to bully it to get the sound in.
We call that proximity effect.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I found this fascinating and thank you for indulging me.
Cool.
All right. Good talk. And we're back. Why don't you say what's up, introduce yourself, and say hi.
What's up? This is Bryce. We just got back from a nice dinner, a nice little walk. Closer.
Yes, dude. Very good. All right. And what was your favorite part about today, buddy?
Favorite part about today? Honestly, every time I travel, even for magic, it always kind of just ends up being like just walking around in a new place.
Yeah.
I've been to Eternal Weekend before, but only when it was in Philly, not here. So I've never been to Pittsburgh. I like the vibe here. It's cool.
Yeah. What I find quite nice is that there's a huge variety of like spots to eat and jerk shacks. And there's quite a bit of nightlife, and you know, a lot of vulgarity and a lot of nakedness.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
So yeah, it's
not out of control. It's contained. There's a lid on it.
There's a lid on it.
At least, although, what day is it? It's
Saturday.
It's Saturday. Yeah. So most of the times I was walking. Yeah, it was like in the middle of the week. It was wilder out there tonight. So
it is. It do be Saturday, dog.
Yeah.
So, talk a little bit about your games and how they went.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just moping around playing pre-modern. I haven't really played that much this weekend.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm definitely excited to play in the big real tournament tomorrow.
Even
if it's like you're playing against the same people. And it's all the same decks or whatever. It's just like metaphysically different to play in the like 7-round cut to top 8. You can win a cradle tournament than the like you go 2-0 and then your opponent offers to like draw and split tournament.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
just
yeah.
like not the same thing.
Well, I think there's something to be said for the level of focus that you bring to larger events where there's much more at stake and you have to really kind of dial in.
Yeah.
So is that. For you, speaking personally, is there much difference in your quality of play or how you approach calculating lines?
The end result of my quality of play, I don't know.
Yeah.
But as far as my approach, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
like if I'm playing in like the webcam monthlies or like in these 3-rounders, I'm taking it much more relaxed and like kind of it's like a warm up.
Yeah,
it's sparring as opposed to the actual fight.
Now, when you do you have like a pre-game or a pre-tournament like ritual, something that you like to do? Like you go over your deck list, you know do some last minute kind of switcheroo in the sideboard, like, or even something completely unrelated to the deck or the game in general. Like I know, you know, you're an incredibly strong player. And I know for a lot of the folks listening at home, everyone has something that they like to do, like to prepare, or maybe not at all. Maybe they just throw the deck box in a bag and they go. But I believe I would be interested to know if you have something that you go through before something big like this.
I really don't, at least not in like the sense of like in intentionality.
Yeah.
It's usually just like I end up changing things at the last second and staying up too late and not sleeping well and then having to drive really far in the morning feeling kind of crazy all day and somehow it works out some percent of the time.
Well, you run on
adrenaline. But that won't be happening today because we, you know, it'll be a short commute to the event. We're already here. Like,
yep.
Wasn't going nuts partying or anything. So it's like I'll feel physically and mentally better than having to, you know, drive 3 hours to hang out with you guys in Mass for the seasonal or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And talk about where you're from originally.
Yeah, I'm
you're an upstate New York grinder originally, or
I'm from like literally the most western Mass possible. And I've moved around a lot for school and relationships and various things, but sure. I've been in like the Albany capital region area in New York now for about 10 years consecutively, and I was there for a while before that as well.
So I think you and I have some commonality in our background. Like we both came up playing at Forgotten Freshness and Flipside, and
yeah, it was cool to meet you through all the Duress Crew stuff, and then when I found out the like Mechanicville connection, it was like, oh shit, now there's like a dozen people that we know mutually.
Yeah,
it's just another fun thing to talk about. Or
it's
whatever.
Super bonkers, right? How, you know, the circle gets smaller and smaller. And I know, like, you know, a lot of folks who used to go play at Frank's Shop, that's Forgotten Freshness Classic Gaming in Mechanicville, New York.
Yeah, if you like retro video games, check out Frank's stuff. He's the best. What's that? You did too? Whoa.
Really?
I guess Billy did too.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, Frank is really well known. He's been in the game a long time, and he's 100% like done right by everyone who's
He's the man, dude. I've known him since I was probably like 12.
Yeah.
He's just like chill.
So
he's
for like 3 years then.
Yes.
Yeah. Frank is the best. Frank, if you're listening, buddy, love you and miss you, pal. Praise the sun.
Hell yeah.
So, yeah. So that's kind of cool how, you know, it's like, oh, wow, I know you, and I've played against you before, or, you know, like, you run into the same people over and over. I mean, if you do something, anything, for long enough, you're going to start developing, you know, that connection with people, and then you realize, oh, wait a minute, you have a ton of background. Oh, you actually used to play with this person, or, like, whoa. Like, Rob, you got really old. Holy shit. You know, so that's actually very, very cool. There's a big upstate New York connection, so and a lot of really strong players.
Even like weird scene. Like I don't go to that many like shows anymore or whatever, but when I did, every once in a while, like, you'd get the tap on the shoulder and be like, yo, do you play Magic? And it's just like, yeah. Right. And then it's just like some guy you beat in a Delver Mirror 4 years ago. They remember it and you don't, and you're just like, all right, cool, let's go smoke a butt or whatever. Yeah,
well, but I think there's an appropriate saying that I think you know, Billy might appreciate, and that would be the axe forgets, the tree remembers forever.
Yes.
You know, so like you won the game, all well and good. You pack up the deck and you go, but like, you know, you smash somebody and they're just like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you leave an impression. So, yeah, that's actually really sick. is there anything else you want to add?
No, I don't really have anything special.
Is this your first like one-on-one interview?
Yeah, other than like getting jobs or whatever, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I think you did a fantastic job overcoming nerves and like being brave and stepping up to the mic. You did a great job.
Everyone here is like super encouraging and supportive about everything, which is great. I'm like pretty base level, like high anxiety about everything.
Yeah.
So it's nice to whatever, give stuff a shot.
Now, do you find the predictable repetition of gameplay to be soothing?
Well,
aside from the,
I have been known to like pick a linear combo deck and play it for like 12 years straight or whatever. So pretty much the first time I cast Dark Ritual, like in a real deck, I was like, oh yeah, this is it.
Yep.
And it's like I've never really enjoyed playing online, like Magic Online or Magic Workstation or any of those.
No, there's a tactile sense that's missing.
There's
there.
A huge difference between like, oh, I'm gonna goldfish the whatever this Sam Black guy's blessing control deck, which I also love, but yeah. I can't really like goldfish it. Versus like, oh, I'm just gonna do like 20 like games with Tess against myself before bed, or just right. Like I have 10 minutes to kill, and you know that kind
sure.
of thing.
Sure. I think there's something to be said about that tactile element, that like corporeal element where you're actually handling cards, you know, you develop some dexterity.
Yeah.
And there's something much different about that brain body connection instead of just sitting there still aside from, you know, your mouse hand or whatever.
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
That's very real. So good job, pal. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts.
Right on.
All right. Come have a conversation with me. Don't worry about the microphone. Ignore the mic.
Oh.
Okay.
All right.
All right. tell the folks listening who you are. Give yourself an intro and say a little bit about yourself. I know it's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
Names are hard.
Well, my name's Brett.
Hi, Brett.
I am from upstate New York, born and raised.
Are you also a mechanic villain, or are you from the swamps of Ballston Spa?
No. Or just strictly Albany.
Uh-huh.
But...
Yeah, dude. So you came up playing at like Flights of Fantasy.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's funny because I overheard you and Ryan, or you overheard me and Ryan.
Yeah.
Talking about the old original flights. On
was that
Ontario?
Ontario.
And then it was on Central.
Correct.
And then it moved again.
Yeah.
Again.
It was really close to Bogies, wasn't it? It was relative. It was like down the street from
when it was Ontario. That was before my time.
Yeah.
I started playing very young on Central Avenue. I remember my dad taking me and my friend to my very first Magic tournament.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed up with like a pile of probably a fourth edition starter deck and a beta Birds of Paradise that my cousin gave me.
Whoa.
And
do you still have that Birds?
So this is the story. Back in those days, people played for cards. That's what you did.
Yeah.
And so me and my friend wanted to play a game against not each other and some strangers.
Yeah.
And some older fellows who knew what they were doing.
Okay.
Were like, yeah, but we want to see your cards first. Like, what do you got to play for? Right?
Oh, no. I see.
Yeah, they were, you know. They were gonna get me, so yeah, I lost, and they got the bird. but something about that was memorable, you know.
Now, do you play much vintage now?
I have been primarily playing vintage.
Now,
lately,
do you think that initial trauma, losing your beta birds, is what spurred you on to apply yourself in that sub discipline? Or do you just enjoy casting zero casting cost artifacts?
I enjoy degenerate magic.
Yeah.
Just like, you know,
straight degen shit. Oh, it's turn one, I win. Let's go get something to eat.
Yeah, I mean, but I think vintage gets a bad rap for, you know, I think people always say that turn one.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, I don't even remember what they say. Like, it's already over.
Who
like,
gives a shit what
right?
they say?
But vintage actually has a lot of really rich, interactive gameplay,
yeah.
especially right now in the format. I think it's if you like Legacy,
you'll
or did for Vintage. or you did 4 years ago.
If you like Drakkar Noir, you'll love Midnight.
I mean, yeah, right.
You know, that's something that I've noticed. You know, just even walking around the venue, watching, you know, very adept players, you know, play Vintage. They're very thoughtful and calculating, and they have this almost monastic, you know, trance-like, you know, focus, because beneath the surface, they're calculating line upon line upon line based on the board state, of course, and their understanding of the their deck and their opponent's deck. But it seems like, you know, you do a compare and contrast with people doing like draft, you know, that's much lighter, or like people playing like, you know, some kind of other constructed format. You go into like Vintage territory, and it's almost like the air feels heavier.
Yeah.
Like, because the game is being played on the edge of a knife.
Yeah.
You know? So that's my sense of that. Do you have anything to add?
Well, I think that's what I like about it. It's very edge of your seat.
Yeah.
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 So I like Magic like
entertaining
that.
Games, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, win, lose, or draw, you're both engaged in a discipline you both love, and you're being entertained by this, you know, this discipline where you get to kind of calculate and interact, and you know, I think you and I are in agreement there. It's quite nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you this: I certainly did better in pre-modern so far this weekend.
Okay.
Than I did in Vintage.
Do you think it has more to do with the level of opponents, or is it just a matter of natural variance, or what?
Well, it's probably just the amount of matches I played.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
part of it. But yeah. So I think at Eternal Weekend, so I started out undefeated yesterday. And
sick.
Those first few rounds, I think you're going to face a lot of, you know, opponents who don't have the power or they don't have the experience, or they're borrowing a deck and they're not used to all the nuances, and
perhaps there's a little bit more high variance
too, right?
You know,
but once you kind of get through that, you get to the players who really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to lose. So not that I don't know what I'm doing, but
of course. But I think as the brackets tighten, I mean, you really have to be on it, you know. And part of that is, you know, how well you slept, how your diet was, how dialed in you are to the game, to the meta, you know. There are myriad factors that play in, right?
Yeah.
What are some of the more important factors for you? Like, do you find like if you didn't sleep well, you play like shit, or maybe if you sleep too much, you play like shit, or diet, or you know, or if you have particular difficulty in a certain matchup?
Well, I would definitely, I mean, of course, sleep and eating is very important.
Sure.
But you can still play good Magic. I mean, I wouldn't recommend doing it on the amount of sleep I've had so far this weekend.
That's important for sure. Yeah,
I will say this. I think a lot of people are intimidated by Vintage,
because
of the price mark on the cards.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. I mean, I was loaned Power, and it was anxiety.
It's nerve wracking.
Like, I wanted to give it back as soon as I could, you know?
Because you're holding in your hand the down payment to a house, if not the cost of a house.
Yeah. And it's kind of ridiculous in a sense. It's pretentious almost, right?
I agree, yeah.
But there's also something so
it's
powerful about holding a Lotus in your hand
and
casting a recall and activating a Bazaar.
they're
and
just
it's nostalgic as well.
Yeah, they're so iconic and so powerful, and there's so much history and lore, and
you can almost feel the intent of our Lord and Savior Richard Garfield PhD in
the cards. You could say that sometimes. I don't know if turn one ancient tomb Chromox Chancellor Trigger Archon of Emeria is how Garfield intended, but but it's something.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate your insight. Is there anything else you want to add?
Just that I'm happy to be at Eternal Weekend with the Duress crew. And
bro, it's so good to see you again.
Yeah.
It's
Rob, so you're amazing.
You're a gem, dude. Thank you.
We're
going to
be friends. I know it.
All right. All right, extra bonus content, extra interview. Hell yes. Come over here and sit on my lap.
Yes, Santa Claus.
All right. Hold on. Let me bring your game down a little bit. All right. Where is your game? Okay.
Testing, testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. Where the game be at?
Yeah, there you go. That looks pretty good. So... yeah, come sit on my lap. We'll talk about the first thing that comes up. Why don't you introduce yourself and say what's up?
What's up, everybody? This is Brendan.
Yeah. So what was your favorite part about today, Saturday, at Eternal Weekend?
Yeah. I guess it's I'll break it into a few different categories.
Sure.
One of the first things I did is, thanks to Bryce burning a hole in my pocket, he told me that Margaret Organ Keane had artist-proof ivory towers, I had to go over and grab one of those. I was never really like a signature person or like an artist proof person, but I've started slowly dipping my toes in that world, and she had a Chinese artist proof ivory tower, and I love just collecting foreign cards, so that was sweet. I didn't really have much time so far to get things signed or anything, so that was cool to be able to just like talk to her for a while. It was really early and there was nobody else in line, so we just got to kind of shoot the shit a little bit, so that was fun.
Amazing.
And getting to play someone that I had played in a previous tournament again, and just like be able to talk and chat, and you know, someone that I had never met before, and you know, now we were trading Korean cards back and forth, like we both had those in our deck, and you know, it's just like one of those kind of serendipitous things where you just meet somebody that like vibes with you, like that was pretty cool.
Quite cool. Yeah,
dinner with the fellas was really the highlight of the day, as it usually is. The dinner is almost more important than the magic, so was high tier fun for me.
It was sneeze time, sorry, but I agree. I think after the action of the day, settling in when the pressure is off, and you know, having something to eat and just chopping it up and laughing a little bit, that's awesome. That I agree with you. That feels really nice, you know. So, you want to talk a little bit about your gameplay over the weekend so far?
Yeah, absolutely. So, big shout outs to David Rasko, who's 75 I stole, like, just straight up with no thought about it whatsoever.
Card for card.
And the reason that I wanted to do that is that there are a few kind of, like, if you're a Dreadnought player, a few kind of interesting choices that you wouldn't necessarily expect. One of them being there is one main deck Gush.
Interesting.
Which, believe me, I raised my eyebrows about as well when I first saw it. But
that's fascinating.
I have been interested in playing the Tide List versions, because at least in our area, one of the decks that was really targeted against, like the red green sort of Oath decks, is not really a super widely played deck in our area. So the Tides weren't like really pulling as much weight as, you know, I wanted them to be.
The reviled cards.
Yes, yeah. So I'm contributing to the betterment of the world by still playing Dreadnought, but not playing Parallax Tide. So you're welcome, everybody.
So I
saw that list and I was just immediately interested in it because it also plays 2 Thwart, which is a card I am super high on, having faced it in Dreadnought and Stasis, you know, sort of blue mirrors for a while, and it's incredibly good in those sort of environments.
It can be very strong. Yeah,
absolutely. So I like to play the deck a little bit more like a jam style as opposed to playing like a longer, more controlling game, and then just kind of finishing the game when you have everything all lined up.
Sure.
So Thwart definitely allows you to do that, you know, a little bit more. It's kind of like an extra safety net there.
It's a little bit more dynamic and entertaining that way anyhow, instead of just being super stodgy and just, you know, slowing everything down. And then when you're certain, you know, you can reach a favorable outcome, then doing it. No, just like get in. Fuck up the board state, make everything really chaotic, and like just see what happens. Like if they have it, they have it, and you have a thwart.
Yeah, and there were times like unfortunately Nick and I got paired against each other, and Nick was on elves with Tanglewire, and that was a case where being able to return three islands instead of two was actually kind of a benefit. That was nice. Yeah. And especially because that matchup, you really have to get an early dreadnought down, or you're just going to get overrun and they're going to go wide, and you can make a 12-12 and it's not even going to matter. So
I mean, especially with such a pilot as Nick, who will absolutely deuce on you you give him an inch.
Believe me, I've been on the receiving end of that playing dreadnought quite a few times, so I knew what I was up against. And that being able to just have the extra safety blanket of just being able to have two free extra counters that really help in that sort of matchup, because the survival is really important, and you know, jamming at the same time is also very important. You can't always fight like both of those axes at once, and Thwart really kind of covers a little bit of the basis for supporting that like more early jam kind of style that you need to win that matchup.
That's really nicely put. I mean, it seems like the deck is, it rewards a little bit more of an aggressive play style, you know?
Yeah.
And does that suit you more?
I don't know. It's interesting because I kind of exist on both extremes, I would say. Like, one of the matches I enjoyed the most this entire weekend was against Stasis, where literally the first eight turns we just said island go and nothing happened, and it was like everything I ever dreamed of and more. So that was super fun. But on the other end, I'm very much like a plus B combo type person, so sure. I think that's why Dreadnought really appeals to me, is you know, it's not a mid-range deck like the way that we refer to as mid-range, but it has the ability to very much decide its role kind of on the fly, which is super fun and interesting for me. So yeah, having those like combo and sort of control elements in one deck is like just super appealing. It's really fun.
I love that. And I think, you know, how it's constructed and how you can play it. I mean, I guess that depends on the matchup, your mood. I mean, it seems that it affords quite a bit of flexibility, you know, situation dependent, opponent dependent. So it's unsurprising that the deck is performing that well, and that, you know, somebody who can exist on both ends of the spectrum would gravitate towards that type of deck, you know.
And I think you really need both aspects of it. Like, if somebody is used to playing like, you know, Tide Control or something like that, where it's just, you know, do nothing, eventually win the game, sometimes there are just matchups where you literally just have to go for it with no backup whatsoever and just play, because it's not going to get any better for you, or you've already used X number of resources that, you know, are in your graveyard and they're not in your deck anymore. And sometimes you just have to jam it, and like, it feels really unnatural and, you know, kind of scary or
it's
whatever.
It's uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're used to just kind of being a Drago style control player. Mm. So you really have to just get comfortable with whatever end of the spectrum you're not comfortable with. And this is a good deck to do it with.
And conversely, I think there's something to be said for kind of playing in a style that your opponent is uncomfortable with, right? You know, kind of catching them off balance and like creating imbalances in the position that will kind of throw them off of their center. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the reasons the deck is so strong, besides the fact that it's just a two mana combo for a 12-12, like, you know, that's obvious, but the cantrips, and especially now that Accumulated Knowledge has become more of an inclusion in the deck, you can play a lot of really customizable cards in really low numbers and expect to find them with some amount of regularity. Like, you can play a one of in the sideboard, and, you know, with Flash of Insight, with Impulse, with, you know, all these cards that dig so deep, like, you can be assured that you won't have to play, you know, four of a sideboard card necessarily to, like, see it when you need it.
Like, there's no need to play, like, Limdol's Vault.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, we're not trying to look at, you know, a million cards at once and pay life for it and all that. You know, it's just throughout the natural course of the game, you're going to have some excess mana that you can just turn into selection, and that's why the deck is so strong.
No, sensational. Now, speaking of combo decks, I'll speak a bit on one of my matches today. It was against Savage Dan from Orlando, Florida. My man. And I was surprised to see that it was a mirror match. I was playing Devourer combo because I'm trying to, like, learn that deck and learn what it wants to do. I mean, I know what it wants to do, but just sure, how to get it to go,
right,
is a whole different story. Probably an easier task for someone with much more talent and skill, but I think playing difficult things will make you a better player. But
100%.
But that was very kind of, it was nerve-wracking.
Sure.
Because we were both, like, all in, but in different ways. He was playing more of a tangle wire strategy, and trying to kind of keep things tamped down and slow, whereas I'm just like, I just want to kill you immediately.
Right.
You know, it took him to turn, I think, four or five to kill me game one. I killed him turn two, game two.
Nice.
And then I looked at him and said, as we were shuffling, I said, I offer you a draw. Let's split the prize because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to, like, coin flip, you know, whoever gets there first, you know, right, this is dumb. He's like, I agree. So so we shook hands, split the prize, and afforded ourselves a little bit of time to go get something to eat. So shout out to Savage Dan from Orlando.
My man. And you kind of touched on something that we've talked about a little bit off of the podcast, so might as well do it now. Devourer is also a deck that I'm super interested in as kind of one of the most, or I guess I should say one of the least convoluted combo decks, because there are plenty in pre-modern that, you know, require a bit of a care and feeding. So yeah, Devourer is really kind of a natural interest of mine. And you brought up something that I kind of struggled with, is I feel the kind of pure combo versions, shall we say, are strong but a bit fragile, and, you know, that kind of comes with the territory.
Of
and
course,
the sort of stacksy versions that you were talking about are kind of where, without, you know, being an expert in this deck at all, is just kind of naturally where my ideas would lie. And I was interested, as somebody that has played it for a while, Devourer in general, like, have you tried the stacksy versions? Like, did you prefer one or the other? Or
thanks for asking. I have not tried, but I'm not averse to it, and I think it feels natural since you are endowed with multiple artifacts that you can, you know, that you can tap. I think the mirror match was that card is a little bit less impactful, but I could see it being, like, an absolute ass beater in other matchups. So I just got to get my hands on some tangle wire.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I feel the same way, in that the sort of pure combo version, if we want to call it that, has to play a lot of just random artifacts to support Tinker. Like, that's just how the deck is supposed to work. But in my mind, like, what other deck plan overlaps with playing a bunch of random artifacts, then, and stacks is really where you want to be. And you can draw the game out in a way that allows you to naturally assemble the combo, where it feels like when you're playing the other version, you just need to, like, dig and dig, and, like, you just have to have everything, like, kind of line up. And, like, people are playing maybe one or two factor friction as, like, your sort of main
and
card advantage spells. It's like this, it just doesn't feel right to me.
I find myself wanting for more velocity.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the deck.
100%.
And I've seen really talented, really skilled stacks players, like, let's take, you know, Trent, for instance.
Sure.
Who puts on a clinic.
Yes.
Every time he plays that deck, and it's, like, humbling. I'm like, oh, okay, so I guess this is how it's done, right?
Yeah.
But seeing the sheer power in how he wields those kind of tactical and strategic elements in that deck, I'm like, oh, well, why wouldn't I want that for myself in the context of maybe this AB combo, right?
Sure.
So two great tastes that taste great together.
Absolutely.
Potentially.
Yeah, and obviously they kind of account for each other's weaknesses, in that sometimes the Devourer plan just doesn't line up and you don't really find the sort of pieces that you need. And then the opposite problem with stacks is sometimes you have the game completely locked up and you have actually no way to win the game.
No pressure.
And so those two kind of meet in the middle, in that you can sometimes you just draw into the combo and, you know, it just works, or you can kind of naturally lock your opponent out and then maybe finish the game with something like Karn and just have the combo in your back pocket, like not as your main focus. But sometimes if the stars align and you just need to end the game right now, then you still have it.
Oh, sensational. I like the idea a lot. And I'm looking forward to kind of plumbing the depths of that kind of marriage of those two, you know, archetypes. I think it's going to be interesting. some of the boys have been kind of throwing ideas my way about like how to kind of reevaluate my approach to it and, you know, what to add. And, you know, we're coming up with some very interesting ideas and hopefully I'll be able to try them out in real time in the future. So,
yeah, there's a sort of deck we'll keep secret for now that both of us are excited to make some modifications to. So maybe those will appear on this show sometime soon.
Yeah. Maybe I'll publish a deck list at some point if it performs well.
If it materializes.
That's right. Anything else you'd like to add before I hit stop? Because it is, what, like 1 billion o'clock already?
It is quite late, yeah. I guess I'm preaching to the choir here, but I'll say just, like, encourage people to play pre-modern.
Oh, yeah?
There's a lot of people at these larger events that people use the term, like, format tourist, and I really don't sort of like that term, but they are, in the sense that, like, this might be the only, you know, one or two times a year that they ever get to play this format. And like, if you can just, even if it's not in your nature, just like try to be extra outgoing and friendly and just like make sure people have a good time doing this stuff, then not only will maybe they bring more friends or maybe they come back, but also you can convince other events to have pre-modern stuff if like people are talking about it and events are growing in size. So yeah, just remember that besides the game, like this is a community supported format. And I think there's been a lot of evidence of people that I've overheard, you know, in games on the side that just say like, wow, like this is super nice, like people are trading cards, giving out stickers and everything. So yeah, just try to always keep in the back of your mind that you can do like something small that might, you know, really help people get interested in this format and come back.
Beautiful advice. And I think it's certainly more of a cultural thing. You know, pre-modern certainly feels more cultural in the same way that like punk and hardcore used to, you know, trading patches or pins, or much like we, you know, trade signatures or like, you know, stamped cards or what have you.
Yeah.
And I think people kind of, you know, shitting on the format or gatekeeping doesn't do any good for anyone. I mean, what are you protecting, right? You're isolating yourself in this thing, right, that you want to keep for yourself, but it's not going to improve if it doesn't grow. And it doesn't grow if people feel like, you know, the representatives of the format are these judgmental jerks, right? I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I think that's a perfect point to end on. So yeah, take that to heart, everybody. I agree as well. Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Hey, thanks to you for having me. This was a lot of fun, and thank you, Billy, for letting me get on the mic for a little while.
You're welcome.
Yay, buddy.
There he is.
You have anything you want to add, Billy?
No, thank you.
Billy says, get the hell off the mic so I can go to bed.
That's right. Good night, everybody.
Take care.
All right, so just a couple final thoughts. I want to encourage everyone to, you know, take their gameplay seriously, but not too seriously. Calculate lines well and be kind to your opponents. After all, we are in a very privileged position to be able to play a game that we love and have loved for a long time. And you know, the kinder we are and the more we generate positivity across the table, the longer we all get to enjoy it. So this is Rob signing off for the rest of the crew. Thanks for listening. All right, so here is the. I'll give it a quick intro for just for you, Billy, so you know where to like. Sort of put, so this is the kind of bonus content after the exit music. All right. So we're meeting up with the rest of the boys, going to get something to eat at a cool little like speakeasy pub spot that served really good food, and it was kind of weird because there's like jerk shacks everywhere and like a cash checking place, but then this like really nice fancy spot like in the middle of everything, and three dudes like stumble up the street like wielding a gallon of Hennessy, and one of them kind of like leans into where like there's these window door things that like open up the front of the restaurant, and my man yelled, "Yo, white people, suck my dick!" And it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And I regret not running up to that dude to get a soundbite.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That was it. Yo, white people, suck my dick.